Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council work session on April 23rd, 2007. We have one item to talk about on our work session, and it's amendment to the zoning ordinance regarding attached housing. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. Last September, City Council, on second reading of an ordinance concerning attached housing that the Planning Commission had worked on for several months, came to you, and at that time, there was several small questions as to some of the requirements that the Planning Commission had recommended. Those particularly were concerning the median width that these units would have, percentage of units that would be entered from the backyard or through a back garage versus the front, how wide some of those driveways would be. I think there was general agreement with the fact that the unit should vary in height and the front part of it. So Ed Evans has gone out and he's taken some photos of several different locations, both here in the Aiken area and then up in the Charlotte area, of what this should look like. Not what it should look like, but what other communities have as far as entrance medians and then the driveways. So if council doesn't mind, I'd like to have Ed go ahead with his PowerPoint presentation, and feel free to ask Ed any questions as he goes along.
Thanks, Roger. Some of these photographs were taken in the Charlotte area, some developments up there that are viewed as being innovative, and they're sort of in the ION type of mode. And the focus of these is really on the width of the landscape medians in the projects. And if you remember, the draft of the ordinance would give two choices for an attached housing project. One would be that you could have parking to the rear of the units with no driveways from the street into the unit. And the other choice would be that you could have the driveways from the street into the, you know, directly into the unit. But if you did that, you'd have to have a landscape median. The draft from the Planning Commission says that that median should be 40 feet wide. And that was one of the points of discussion last time. And so that's, again, the point of these pictures is to try to give you a feel for the size of medians. Just to give you as a starting point, the width of the median right in front of the building here on Park Avenue is 88 feet. The first picture is a development called Faulkner Square in Davidson, North Carolina. And it's tough to get a good photograph of these, but this is a 70-foot wide median. You can see some attached housing on the right-hand side. Most of what I'm going to show you is going to be two-story, or really all of it is. I didn't see any one-story attached housing. It's all two-story, pretty much upscale. There's attached housing over to the left also, which you really can't see. Again, 70 feet wide. This is also in Faulkner Square in Davidson, two-story attached housing, 40-foot wide median.
Ed, I've been there.
Good.
And this is the neighborhood that has the houses in it where you won't know which house is a low-income house from the rest of the house unless you go to the back of it, because on the front they all look the same. But they've got affordable housing in this neighborhood.
And what price range, Beverly, would you say, or Ed, if you know? You've got affordable and then you've got higher.
We went into one of the units and I think it was more or less like maybe $220,000, $230,000. And this was not the affordable unit. This was one of the attached units that one of the retirees lived in, and only some of them were available for us to go through. Mm-hmm. But
Did you get through an affordable one?
Yes, and they don't have the backyards, the decks or the patios. They don't have any of that kind of thing in the backyard. But
did you get a price on that?
I think they were more or less from 90 to 140 or something like that. I can't remember. But I do somewhere have a DVD on it because the gentleman that showed it to us did give us a DVD. Mm-hmm. It's the median's just wonderful in that.
I guess I wonder about the median. Is there a reason that they have a 40-foot median? I mean, if you've got space, then that's great. It could be 80 feet, but is there a reason why 40 feet?
Why they have 40 feet?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, is it play?
The roads are just like this. I mean, you can't go very fast through those roads because they're very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
I did ask the planning commission, a planning commissioner, why 40 feet was, why was that the suggested width? Right. And they said they had picked one of the narrower parkways in the city of Aiken since the goal was to somehow emulate the ambience, you know, of the city. And they picked the one in front of the post office, and that was 35 to 40 feet, something like that. That is that what you understand as well?
I remember that being discussed. I'm not sure that's the actual reason. All right, this is Burkdale Village, again, north of Charlotte, 50-foot wide median. Here you've got angle parking in front of the units. Again, not a one-story unit. Those are actually three, I think. But again, just to give you a feel of the width, that's a 50-foot.
Again, it's always a function of price. And that kind of 40 to 70 foot median is going to add a tremendous amount to the cost of the structures, and you just can't get around it. I think, Mr. Mayor, that's
right, and that's why I was wondering. Beverly was talking. She's been in one that had 40 feet, I was wondering about the price of the low income.
You can go back to that slide just before that. They have at the end somewhere. There's a place where you can take your dogs and what do you call it, where they, you can walk your dogs through there, because in the other part of the neighborhood, they're not allowed to roam loose, but they do have a place where you can go and turn them loose to play.
Is it a penned-in place?
It's fenced in.
With a little fence?
It's fenced in, but you know, it's tree-lined, so you can't really see much of a fence.
I imagine they also walk them out in the area, the part that we were just looking at, that wide open space. I assume they can walk the dogs out there too.
But the units themselves aren't. What's on Newberry Street? They're not elaborate. They're very moderate.
Okay, this is in Burkdale Village. This does not show a median. This is attached housing. Two-story, obviously, and this kind of shows you what happens when you move it up close to the street rather than being set back with driveways and parking in front of it. And this is what it looks like on the rear of those units. So there's a huge difference in the front and the back. But parking's in the rear. There's a driveway that goes into this area with a circular drive and individual driveways coming off of that.
But then they have more open space
in the middle.
That's a good point.
Right, right.
So as far as land use, they're using just about as much land per unit.
They are.
Or perhaps even more. The way
they are.
Those look.
That looks pretty neat, I think.
I agree.
And if you look at the front, if you go back right there, to the front, all the fronts look the same. It kind of looks like to me that they might be the same, and they're lined up in a straight line. Does it look like that?
Pretty much.
There's a bay on one,
like,
and there's not on this one.
There's some variety.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay.
But the question would be, again, what sort of price range do those run in?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would guess, again, 250, wild guess.
Yeah, they look, but, see, compared to
absolutely
where we've got our problem here is in the 90 to 120,000 that are just being built like row houses.
And again, all the one story that I have seen, almost without exception, seems to look like what's behind them all. I mean, you don't see anything real creative with that type of attached units. This is in Charlotte, close to downtown, the first ward, 65 feet wide, attached housing on each side, two stories, kind of tough to see. Same median, just a little different angle. They've got parallel parking on those streets. First Ward, Charlotte, attached housing, no parking on those streets. That's a 12-foot median.
What's the name of it?
First Ward.
First Ward.
The name of the development? Yeah, First Ward.
ARD?
Yeah, it's...
It's a mixed income area.
Right.
What?
It's a mixed income area up there, just south and east of the downtown Charlotte.
Right.
Yeah, downtown Charlotte or central Charlotte's divided into four quadrants, four wards, and this is in the first ward.
Mm-hmm. Between downtown and Presbyterian Hospital? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm not sure.
I'm not too sure where the hospital is, but it's about 2 miles from southeast. It was very, very low income area, and they put in a mixture of housing, market rate, subsidized housing. Some are rental, some are, home ownership. But you can't tell the difference. That's the great thing, that one area.
This is near Fort Mill. And again, this is just another example, two-story attached. There's no street or parking in the front of these units. It fronts on a park. It's really, really a nice setting. And that's the rear of those units. There's a, 15-foot driveway that provides access to the garages.
Seem to be full, and were there a lot of for sale signs or for rent or whatever they do?
Most of it is pretty new, and I would say most are occupied, but it's a little tough to tell.
Did you get a chance? Probably not. But did you, by chance, talk to anybody about that might have lived there?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. And then coming back home, this is on Eastgate Drive between. Excuse me, the mall and Publix looking west toward the Woodside Circle. That's a 15-foot median. This is west of the Woodside Circle looking toward the Woodside Gate. That's 16 feet. And then going back into the Spencer Drive area, that's a 15-foot median. Most of the driveways that you see are 20 feet wide, typically. Another one looking toward the mall, 14.5, 19, and 11.5, and that's it. Any questions?
Okay. I lived in an attached community in Washington, D.C., that in fact had about a 50-foot median. It was lovely, absolutely lovely. But I think if we're talking affordable housing, you can't get there with that kind of a median. I mean, the 15-foot, maybe 20-foot, I think might work. But again, I don't know the cost that much. But just intuitively, anything 40, I think, is unrealistic if we still expect to have reasonably affordable housing. And so maybe you have to really be prescribing for more than one market. There is a price point there that we need, certainly in some places. And we could also have that kind of community, but I think even here it's going to be something like this powder house thing. It's going to run in the 175 to 250 range, almost certainly.
Ed, if currently on attached housing, we're requiring a 20% open space.
I believe it would be, if it's attached single family, not in plan residential, there is no open space requirement.
There's no open space requirement whatsoever.
If so, if it's apartments, multifamily, there's a 40% requirement. But if it's just straight, a zone that allows attached housing but is not plan residential, it's going to be a subdivision with individual lots, there's no open space requirement.
So you're telling me that the developer of the one behind the mall just voluntarily put in those 15-foot medians?
I believe that's correct. Part of that is zoned planned residential, and it may have been a requirement through the planned residential, you know, approval that he have some. But I think it's pretty much voluntary.
What I'm getting at is I'm in full agreement with any development to have a certain amount of green space. If a median indeed could be considered that green space, then, you know, I mean, as long as we keep it as a certain percentage of the property, I don't see where that would be a problem. But here again, you know, we're facing a problem with affordable housing. Pretty soon, you know, it's going to be where newly married couples and retired school teachers are not going to be able to afford to live in Aiken. And I just see, you know, Aiken heading down the pathway in which Hilton Head has traveled, and the majority of the blue-collar workers now no longer live on Hilton Head, but live off, and in some instances in the grocery stores and all our bus stand. And I certainly wouldn't want our city to get into that type situation.
The proposed RSA zone for attached housing would require 20% open space.
Okay, but could this be considered as open space? I mean, if we require them to have 20% and we're going to ask for a 40-foot median, then that should be considered open space.
And I think it would be. I think the definition of open space in the ordinance, if I remember correctly, the zoning ordinance, is it's got to be at least 6 feet wide, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, if it's 20 feet, 15 feet, yeah, it would count.
I mean, of course, naturally, I'd love for everyone to have open space, number one. Number two is, if it were my preference, whether the open space be in front of the attached housing unit or behind it, where no one could see it except the residents, I would rather it be out front, where an average citizen riding by would be able to see it.
And, you know, especially when they have their driveways so close together in those attached units, a median is really a buffer in that regard, too. Mm-hmm. It saves a lot of dangerous situations, I think. And I think that's a good point. It does look like, you know, I sure think that would add a lot of value to the property if there were a 20% perhaps requirement. There was a lot of difference, though, in the looks. Did you notice that between 14 and 20 feet? I mean, it's a huge difference. 20 feet is almost a playable area. Do you know what I'm saying? It's almost a big enough strip of grass for children. And I noticed some of them had pine bark and all that stuff in them. It seems to me like we ought to encourage it to be an area that people could walk in or play in, or, you know, it would be a usable piece of green space and not something that you can't walk in or play in or do anything in.
Dick, the section of Woodside that has the that was kind of built with the parkways like Old Aiken, do you know how wide those mediums are?
I'm not even sure.
Where they is?
Hmm?
Where's?
Yeah, where the houses do face one another, but there's a median in between. You drive up in, it's off of Plantation Drive. If you were to come in Eastgate and turn right on Plantation, it's the development. It's an older development.
Oh yeah, okay.
Back down on the right.
Tell you the truth, we're so big, I've never even been in there. But yeah, those are very, it's a narrow street and a nice median, but I can't speak to it. Others
with the width of it.
That would certainly be attractive, but I think where I started from is I think 40 is not reasonable if we're thinking of affordable housing.
One thing that does concern me with this is, you know, what we're talking about right now is if these attached housing butts up to a major roadway, or then we would have to have this median between the units themselves and the traffic flowing on the major roadway. Is that correct?
No, I mean, the median would only be where you build a new road into the development. You might have to have, I can't remember the wording exactly, you might have to have some sort of a buffer adjacent to that road just to, for the protection of the new, you know, the new dwellings. But the new median only applies, would only be in the middle of a new road that was built for the project.
Okay. So this would be, let's say, if, just for instance, if we were off of East Pine Log Road and there were entrances into the attached housing unit, there would just be, let's say, one entrance into it. Now, this 40-foot median, would it have to run along the side of Pine Log Road?
No, it'd be perpendicular. You know, okay. As you turn off of Pine Log onto this new road,
yeah,
it would be divided by a median.
Okay, so the new road that you turn into would be divided by that median.
Yep. Right.
But what about in between the attached housing units themselves, where one unit faces the other unit? Such as we have here behind the mall, you showed us a 15-foot median that they have in between the units. So that's not necessarily what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's the same.
Whoops. I'm being confused because I'm wondering if this is just along the side where you enter in, there has to be a median, or does there have to be a median everywhere that you turn to go up into those apartments?
This is, you know, you turn into this road off of Spencer Drive, and you would have a median, as you have a median here. Mm-hmm. What you're discussing is how wide should that median be? Should it be 14 and a half like this one, or should it be 25 or 40 or whatever?
So we could possibly be talking about a 40-foot median between each section of
between
attached
each
housing that faces one another.
Correct.
And then another attached housing backs up to this unit, and then you've got another 40-foot median.
The last question.
So this is just going to be straight down the middle of those attached housing units.
As
everywhere there's a road that goes
right, a new road, and the units face each other. You'd have a median, a landscape median, separating those units that are facing each other.
So we could potentially be talking about a tremendous amount of property at a 40-foot median.
Mm-hmm. Conceivable.
Yeah. I do think we need to, if we're talking about affordable housing, and think in terms of young people who may have small children. It's, I would think, just for me, that I would prefer to have space in the back where they could play. Not many people play in their front yards. And then the thought of having to have children cross the street to go into a median to play. And that is what they will play. And if there is not space in the back, then where do they go? If you've got all the property in the front for green space or for decoration or for whatever. I mean, what happens to the purpose of having a family move into a neighborhood if they can't go outside to play? And where do they play? They play mostly in backyards. They have patios and they barbecue and they put up little plastic pools and they play games in the backyards. And so I think to put all the property out front looks good to me riding through, but is it functional for a small family to put all the property in the front yard for aesthetic purposes and not have enough in the back?
And that really is the thrust of this proposed ordinance is aesthetics, because that was the concern, I think, the main concern that you had about the attached units.
The real situation is all you have to do is look at Tools Hill and look how the lots are designed. There's backyard space, but not much frontage at all. and there's not a median in between those homes. But from what I can see there and hear, the neighbors know each other well. They're looking after each other in terms of security issues, but yet there's space in the back for them to have family gatherings. We could have easily designed those homes, whereas they could have had more furnished than what they have in terms of green space in front of those properties. But the driveway, if you notice the driveway, it's on the side of the homes rather than directly in front of the homes. So we have enough drive space as well.
One thing that concerns me, too, about some of the Not to a Hill, which is sort of an existing neighborhood,
right,
around some of these new developments, is that we don't let all the green space be around the retention or I don't know what you call those ponds. But, I mean, there's one off of Banks Mill where all the backyards back up to this pond, and it looks like a really dangerous situation to me. And the fence has fallen down, and you know what I mean. We've got to watch that if we have a 20% green space requirement, it's somewhere besides next to these ponds where these kids don't need to be playing, or where children, I don't think, need to be playing.
When you look at this design that's showing on the screen, naturally the median adds character to the neighborhood, and what if you had, if it would be great if you had enough land, a capacity here to have the median and then enough backyard space. But I think it's a trade-off. It's either whether you want the median or have it more on the property where folks are buying. Is that not right, Ed?
The argument is between aesthetics and function.
Right.
And I agree with the younger children concept. Mm-hmm. Backyards are going to be safer than having them play on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Do these houses here have any backyard space?
Very little.
Typically, whatever backyard they have is fenced in per property.
And if I'm not mistaken, the picture you showed of the one just outside Charlotte going up, that is a university community, and the people that live there are older or basically college students or young families. And then there's a retail area not far from there, and some of the homes that were, some of the affordable homes were built to accommodate your college students, who graduate students, and so it's not like you have a lot of children in an area like that, but they do have drive-throughs in the back and garages in the back, and most of the play space is that space in front of those homes. It's not a lot of places to put backyard pools or just anything like that. And so, you know, I think if you're marketing for an older population, that might work well. I mean, that, you know, your development could be for that generation. But if you want to market it toward younger families, then you need to have a little different design for that. I think you got to have some backyard space.
Do you have any? I mean, does the city of Charlotte have regulations regarding attached housing and medians and open space? Or the city of Davidson, for that matter? I don't think Davidson does.
It's been a while since I've checked which towns I have ordinances for. Mm-hmm. I don't recall. I think Davidson might. I don't think there is any kind of a median requirement.
So this was pretty much the developer's idea to do this in this fashion?
No, I think so.
Well, they actually got the Charlotte planners, because they got a lot of CDBG money. I mean, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars to help recarve out a lot of this area and use it in a mixed type thing. One of the things that you might want to consider, and this I haven't talked to Ed about it because I just thought about it now, so it's probably not that great of an idea, is we're creating a brand new category here called attached housing. Now, so this is a new category, new zone that we're going to be creating. Currently, under PR and PC, they come to you with concept plans. And based on what I'm hearing is, well, in some cases we want more backyards, in some cases we want median. All depends on the age of the citizens that are going to be living there. There's just a variety of things that you want to look at. Under the PRPC plan, you get a concept plan that you look at. And in fact, tonight you're going to be looking at first reading of viewing what the facade of that unit's going to look like. We may want to, under this, give guidelines as to what we're looking for, but then require a concept plan that you and the Planning Commission will review on each individual basis, because depending on the situation, a wider median might be great. Maybe it's more aesthetics, but in other cases, we want more play area or open space for kids, as Beverly said, to be able to play in. So each one is unique to itself. And based on that, you could have it come back each time with a concept plan to show how it meets the endeavors of what we have within this ordinance, if that makes any sense.
I'd rather see that, I think, rather than come here with something so hard and fast.
Right, I agree. I think that's a good idea, Roger. And I think Beverly brought up a very good idea about the kids playing. If you don't have something in the back, they're going to be playing out front, they're going to be crossing the roads, traffic coming down. There's some drawbacks of that, certainly, from a safety standpoint.
It's more work on staff's part, it's more work on your part, and the Planning Commission's part, but
that's really the way the ordinance is drafted. It requires a concept plan reviewed by the Planning Commission and approved by council. So that's already in, if that's the way, that's what you're proposing.
But we're not going to have the hard and fast, it's got to have this size meeting, it's got to
more flexibility.
Give some more flexibility within that, so that the developer can go ahead and have the flexibility, and each one's unique.
And what would determine the density?
And let me just throw this one step further. There's a lot of really successful quadruplexes, which are two-story, four units per structure, two on the bottom, two on the top, and each you have several of them with more open space. I think the more we see development occurring here in Aiken, the more uniqueness that we're going to want to look at and how it fits the particular area where these units are going to be built at.
The way it's drafted right now, there is no limit on density. I mean, that would be determined by the concept plan approval.
So if we thought it was too dense, the concept plan is where that could be amended,
correct.
Right?
Yeah,
correct.
It certainly gives us more flexibility. At the same time, it presents a few more problems, too, as to how come you did that for A and didn't do it for B. And the situation is so similar, you know. So we'll all have to make our best judgments on those kinds of things.
Is there a minimum amount of property that needs to be involved? Or did I miss that?
No. Again, it's pretty much wide open, except for the maximum height of 35 feet. Mm-hmm. And the required open space of 20%. It's pretty much up to you.
Okay. Are we ready to have this come back to us next meeting on first reading?
Well, it was coming back to you. I believe this was going to be the second reading.
Second reading.
But let us look at it staff-wise and see what changes, if any, may need to be made based on what we just talked about.
Yeah, I think the 40-foot thing is probably my biggest problem as a minimum. I'm sorry.
What was that thing? What'd you say? I'm sorry.
40 feet is 40. Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's something.
As a minimum, there might be somebody, some developments may say they'd like to do 40.
Yeah. 60.
Yeah.
80.
Yeah.
60, 80.
Okay.
Are we all set?
Yep.
Okay, Ed, thank you very much for your work here. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to our Aiken City Council meeting at this time, our regular agenda, on April 23rd, 2007. And we're pleased that you're with us. And if you would, and desire to stand with us for our prayer and our Pledge of Allegiance, please.
May we pray. Heavenly Father, as we look to you this evening, we come to you with humble hearts, Lord, thanking you for the goodness, for the blessings, for your mercy, for your love that you've given to us. Father, we thank you for the blessing of allowing us to live and take part in such a wonderful city as the city of Aiken. Father, we thank you for the hundreds of volunteers that work together to make this city the great city that it is. Father, we just pray that you'll be with each one of us tonight, that you'll give us clarity of thought. Lord, that our minds would work freely. Father, that we would lay aside any selfish motives. Father, that our eyes would be fixed upon what's best for our city and what's best for our citizens. Father, we ask these things in him whose name is above all names. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
Mayor, I'd like to make one addition. It's come to our attention that the Municipal Association meeting that a number of you attend in the summer, which is from July 12th on a Thursday, typically through Sunday the 15th, we need to go ahead and make those reservations. I believe it's next week, Tuesday. And so we need information tonight from as many of you as possible, and I'd just like to add that to the agenda to get that information from those. Oh. But right now it's the 12th through the 15th if you want to look before the end of the evening. But I'd like to add that as an item to discuss.
Oh, okay. Item 5 there under petitions. Anything else? If not, do we have a motion and second? Accept it.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All in favor? Show of hands. Passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I believe someone.
I'm sorry. Sure. You can always ask a question.
I've never seen petitions and requests. How do you handle this? I have another meeting, and I'm concerned with number 3. So is this just a discussion period for the petitions and requests, and we'll handle it later, or what?
Well, this is in the normal agenda, like we get to them after we go through the other part.
And you vote on them tonight?
Oh, yes.
Which item number 3?
Yes.
New business or old business or petitions?
No, the petitions and requests.
Okay. Under that.
Number 3.
Tree protection, but based on zoning versus use. Mm-hmm.
So you do handle it tonight, then, and City Council votes on it.
Yeah. Well, it's not an item to be voted on. It was just an item that was brought up. It went to the Planning Commission. They said it was not needed. So Councilmember Waters asked that we put this on the agenda to discuss it further to see where and what Council would like to do with it.
Okay.
So it's not going to be voted on. Well, Council will make a decision whether we want to move forward with it or not move forward with it.
Good question. So it's a discussion. It's not a yes or no.
Well, it is a yes or no if we move forward.
That's correct. If Council says not to move forward, then the item is, at this point in time, is tabled.
We're going to
going to fight real hard to make sure it moves forward somehow.
Okay. You've got it on tape. Thank you, Rossman.
That's a good question.
Okay, the minutes, that's where we were, I think. Consideration of the minutes of the work session, the regular meeting of April 9th, 2007, and the work session of April 16th, 2007. Any discussion there? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Move for adoption, Mr. Mayor, if those means.
I second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, we have three appointments tonight, all by Councilmember Smith. He would like City Council to consider the reappointments of Channing Jones to the Housing Authority for 5 years, Julie Adams to the Arts Commission, term to expire 2009 for 2 years, and also the reappointment of Joni Slitzler to the Accommodation Tax Committee for a two-year period.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve these appointments. I'm pleased with all of these folks.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under new business, the first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 195 Hickory Road.
Could I back up just 1 second? May I
oh, sure.
Ask that
I'm
we
sorry.
Reappoint Martin Buckley?
Certainly. And anyone else?
I'm sorry, I should have spoken up.
No, my fault. Go ahead, Jan.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to recommend the reappointment of James Finley to the Building Code and Appeals Committee.
Okay. Jane, did you have someone?
That's Martin Buckley to that same
reappointment.
Oh, okay, Martin. Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I'd just like to make a comment. I really thank Council for the timeliness that they have made on these appointments. There was a time when we were in arrears on several different areas, but we're down to just one appointment, and that one hasn't even expired yet. So I really do appreciate it, and I know that the directors that work with all these different committees and boards, having the appointments done on a timely basis is really wonderful. So thank you on our help.
Very good.
Now, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Council Barters asked about Brunson Crum. You know, he's gone back to work as a part-time building inspector, and I just checked with Gary Smith, and he said that's a conflict. So
that is a conflict.
So I've got to find somebody else.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's why I didn't reappoint him tonight.
Under the new business, then, is the first reading of that ordinance, an ordinance to annex property 195 Hickory Road.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property owned by William Buchanan and located at 195 Hickory Road and to zone the same single-family residential, RS 15. This is an existing lot, existing home there. A number of years ago, we annexed a number of properties on Hickory Road. This is either the remaining one or one of two remaining properties that are not in the city. They're interested in receiving sewer system from the city. The Planning Commission felt the zoning was consistent with the comprehensive plan and approved it unanimously. So for your consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 195 Hickory Road under the RS 15 zone.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimous. Item 2, first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance concerning building elevations. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding building elevation for projects in the planned commercial PC and planned residential PR zone. More and more we're seeing PR and PC come to the city, which is what we thought would happen, and not every time, but fairly much on a consistent basis, Council has asked for building plans, what the units would look like, if it's housing or the facade for commercial. So instead of the developers asking us, well, what do you need, we felt it would be better if we go ahead and have this on every particular case. The Planning Commission unanimously recommended the approval of this. And so for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding this middle building elevations for projects in the planned residential and planned commercial zones.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second, Mayor.
Okay. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance to approve the access management regulations. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is, again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance and land development regulations regarding access management. We discussed this for quite some time, that City Council would want to move from the level that the current highway department states where roads or driveways should come into the major highways, and to have a set of regulations that gives the city authority as to the distance between driveways, the fact that we want to have interparcel access, acceleration and deacceleration lanes, and how close a driveway that possibly could cause a hazard. It gives us the ability to close that with council's approval. So for your consideration tonight, after the Planning Commission has reviewed these regulations and gone over them for several months, this is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance and land development regulations regarding access management. And several other cities throughout the United States and in South Carolina have this type of ordinance, which we have modeled ours after.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I'll move this.
All right, I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Under petitions and requests, item 1 is the resolution accepting maintenance responsibility for Marlborough Street from South Boundary to Grace Avenue. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. At the last work session we had a request after a meeting was held between the owners of property on Grace Avenue and the Marlborough area. A number of horses are trained in that area, a number of individuals walk that area, a number of carriages go by in that area, yet it's being used, rightly so, as an access for vehicular traffic. The vehicular traffic, though, travels along portions of the road at a fairly high rate of speed. We would like to get some speed humps in there. We'd like to lower the speed limit to assist the use of the property, which is for horse training and for equestrian uses. By City Council approving this request tonight, we would then write a letter to the Highway Department, and I'm sure they'd be more than happy to give us the ability to take over Marlborough Street from Grace Avenue to South Boundary. Once we have received that permission, we would go ahead and determine the types of speed humps and the size of them, mainly so that a horse trailer would be able to go over those speed humps without any problems. We would lower the speed limit down to 15 miles an hour, and we feel that this may not totally resolve the problem, but certainly would help the problem in that area. In talking to the owners in that area, they're all agreeing to it. You have a petition that you received at the last meeting of all those. And so for your consideration tonight, this is approval of a resolution asking the State Highway Department to authorize the City of Aiken to accept responsibility for the maintenance of a portion of Marlborough Street from South Boundary to Grace Avenue.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2, resolution accepting utility deeds and plats for the conveyance of the sewer and utility easements in the bunkers. Mr.
Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, sir. Routinely, City Council accepts the deed of dedication for water, sewer, roads, storm drainage, etc., within major developments and subdivisions. We have a little bit of an unusual situation. This is somewhat, I guess, akin to a couple of the other developments that this particular attorney has been working with the city. He tends to get the more unusual ones in that Bunkers is a small development, and the sanitary sewers in this particular area and other utilities have never been accepted by the city, and therefore there's always been the confusion at what point does the city go in there to maintain these areas and what point do the homeowners go in there and maintain it. We feel our responsibility is to maintain the sewer systems because they're jointly used by several residents from this development. We have gone out there, looked at it, we're willing to accept it. So the proper deeds have been prepared. The only thing we don't have right now is if you look in there, there is a signed petition by the homeowners asking that this be done, but the official petition that we're asking you to approve tonight, the deed of dedication, needs to be signed by the homeowners. That shouldn't be a problem. We don't want to wait to get the signatures because this is taking a while to get to this point. So what we're asking you tonight is to pass the resolution approving the acceptance of the deed of dedication from the Bunkers Association, the utilities, and their easements. Before the mayor will sign the official document, all the signatures will be put down on this document. So that way, the Homeowners Association can then circulate this approved document from you all, and hopefully within the next few days to a week, it'll come back to the city and the mayor can officially sign it. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of the attached resolution authorizing the acceptance of the deed of dedication from the Bunkers Association.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr.
Okay. And as Roger said, it's contingent on it being signed finally. Okay, any discussion?
Just as a question of clarity here, you're saying the homeowners will circulate this, or who will get the signatures?
Our attorney right there will go ahead and get us the signatures.
Okay, that's all I want to know.
Can I just make a question?
Mm-hmm. Certainly, sir.
My name is Phil Wolheiser, and I appreciate all the help we've had on this. Like was mentioned, this is an unusual situation where this utility, the sewer, and the water lines have not been deeded over, and it took a lot of searching to find that we did not have any plats that actually showed where this even line was. The Bunkers spent several thousand dollars to get that plat that you see in your package. And just when we're on the plat in the package only shows half the plat. There's half of the entire plat. There's a total of about 1,100 feet. And it's the water lines basically follow the sewer that's shown on the plat. And they're within that utility. We have the president and the secretary of the Bunkers are here also, and they will do a lot of the work to round up the people, because you can see there's like 30 owners units. Some of them have multiple owners, some single, but it takes a lot of tracing down. But we assure you that we will get all those names on the deed as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Okay.
Who's President Hines or Alberta? Who's President Hines? Okay. Okay.
Alberta is the secretary.
Hines, okay.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show the hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 3 is tree protection based on zoning versus use. Mr. Leduc, please.
The City Council had asked as one of the action agenda items with the Planning Commission to take a look at how tree protection should be based. This came up, probably the classic example that we talked about many, many times was by a developer in two separate locations in the city, and that's Somerville Homes. They built a development off of Pine Log Road. We talk about the vortex over there, and they've taken out basically every tree that was out there. And they were also the same developer that worked at Barnwell and Morgan. So they're consistent. Those were the two developments that were very unusual. Most trees taken out. Typically, in most residential developments, most homeowners realize trees are a very valuable commodity and don't remove them. We do have a situation where, although it could be rare, it could happen that in an LP type zone, a developer wants to build residentially, but they decide to go ahead and build residential homes, they remove trees, they decide at some point in time not to build trees, and then the trees are gone. Understand that there are lots of areas in the city that are not zoned for single-family residential, that we, when the Planning Commission looked at this, and the primary area is the old grid of Aiken. The old grid of Aiken is generally multifamily, low and high density, general business. There's very few single-family residential zones in the old grid. So whatever council decides on the tree protection based on zoning versus use, use being residential, it we would have to look at how does this affect not the LPs or the GBs in a lot of cases, but also the multifamily. Because multifamily, GB, LP, in other words, if you're going to build those types of units, they have to have the tree survey already, and the trees are protected. It's only in the residential that they're not protected right now, residential, where a residential property is going to be built. So the Planning Commission looked at this. They felt that after discussing it, the consensus was not to pass an amendment. And they gave four different reasons why not to pass the amendment. After that meeting, Councilwoman Waters had asked that she would like to discuss this further and to make sure that everybody understands and to see, you know, about possibly moving forward with it anyways. So that's where it's at right now. If council does nothing, the item dies because it came out of the Planning Commission stating that they felt that it was not needed.
Okay, Jane, would you like to give us your thoughts?
Yeah, and I don't have necessarily conclusions. I just wanted us to talk about this to some extent, because I think we sort of said we would at Horizons at some point.
And I noticed it says here that there are some cities. I don't know what cities these are. Maybe someone knows. Maybe you know.
I do.
You do, right. That have such a thing, I guess, an ordinance. So it'd be good to get that and see what it says anyway.
I think it would be interesting to look at it, and I have to tell you that I haven't succeeded in going through all of them because there are quite a few. The thing that concerns me the most is if the goal of our tree ordinance is really to enable us to save major trees, then to say to a dentist, say, that's building an office on a piece of property, that he has to save trees and he has to do this and he has to do that, but if someone on the same piece of property says, well, I'm going to build a single family residence, they can go and cut down every single tree and have to do nothing to mitigate it in any way. It's the property that affects the area. I mean, it's not gonna, it is what my concern is here. And I just, it just seems fair to me that, especially, maybe we could just do it in the LP zone. Again, I haven't got any hard and fast answers to this. It does seem interesting to think that in the downtown area, where we've got a lot of multifamily zones and general business zones and CBD zones and things like that, that it might be a good opportunity to try out a tree ordinance on an area of this limited in this way, maybe even limited to the downtown grid if you want to do that. I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to think this through in some way. I don't think the owner should have to pay for a tree survey. I don't think a single family
owner should have to pay for a tree survey. Mm-hmm. I think if the city of Aiken, if we as city council members think this is this important, then that would be our job. And I think one of the very important points that Ed Evans made at Planning Commission, reading through the minutes, is that he doesn't see in his budget the room to have someone do this. And I can see that this would be a substantial amount of work. And that's a compelling argument. A couple of comments regarding that. The other night at our budget meeting, we talked about the need, and I agree with it, to add a halftime person in order to get paperwork back to developers in a more timely manner, in a more expedient manner. If we can pay for that, I would think we could pay something to protect the major trees in the canopy of especially of downtown Aiken at this point. And I don't think this has to be any saddled on anybody. You know, I think it's something that's just terribly important. I appreciate what Mr. Stoker gave us that's highlighted about the incredible value that trees add to property. I don't think that's a revelation to any of us. But I had never thought about single family homeowners having to pay to have a tree survey. I just never had thought of that, to be honest with you. I'm just looking at one of the things when we took the archives and history people years ago, several people from archives and history department drove around over the northeast sector of Aiken and downtown Aiken. And one of the comments they made was how amazing it was that these major trees still exist, even in areas that have obviously been ignored for many years. And those trees give it an elegance and an ambiance that we in our lifetime can't replace. Mm-hmm. And I know it makes it complicated and all that, but I think this is so valuable. And I think this, at the moment, I don't care if we just limit it to the limited professional zone. But Roger has a good point in that in the ordinance, it technically applies to any of these zones, does it not?
It does.
So I just thought there were just so many questions and so many aspects of this that we as a council have the ability to address. And I noticed Jenny Stoker's not here tonight, but one of the suggestions she said was that if we don't have the money for, I wish she were speaking because she can say it better than I can, but if we don't have the money to hire another person in the planning office, maybe it would be even better to have a committee of citizens, to have a commission to work on the tree ordinance and see what would be reasonable and sensible and workable. And I thought that was kind of an interesting idea. People that have lived here for a long time, and we all have different points of view, so whenever we appoint people to things, we get different points of view. They might be better than somebody we'd hire, you know, to make decisions. But I just... I think there are ways we could publicize the tree ordinance more. I think that if one person on the same piece of property has to obey certain ground rules that probably everybody else should, if they're using the same piece of property that's going to be adjacent to the same pieces of property, you know. So those are my concerns, not very well stated and certainly not cogently stated, but things that I think we could talk about and think about.
Why don't we get a copy of maybe a couple cities as a first step, and let's everybody look at it, get a copy to everybody, and review ordinances if there are some. Roger, you said there are, you know about some, and then we'd all be able to read it and get those thoughts as to how they did it, or we could just let Roger give us a synopsis of how they did it and then go from there. I'd like to read one or two myself.
The extreme is one of the cities I'm very familiar with is called Lake Forest, Illinois, which is right on Lake Michigan. It's an older, more mature city, a lot of large trees similar to what Aiken has, but there's not a lot of development because it's a mature town. And in that area,
if a homeowner wants to cut down a tree, they need to get permission from the city to cut it down. You know, so that's one extreme, that any homeowner that wants to cut down any tree would have to get permission. You know, then there's, you know, we look at property rights of individuals, yeah, and what's their property right on an individual lot, and so that's the other extreme. I think it would be difficult if we took the entire area. You know, maybe the starting point that council might want to look at would just be for a particular zone or two. We've made several changes already with the tree protection regulations and the zoning ordinance, and I think everybody recognizes that trees are extremely important, and most residential developers that I've seen, other than Somerville Homes, goes in there and tries to protect trees when they build residential property. But we do get some instances occasionally where that does not happen. Once the development is completed, then I think we need to be very careful as to disturbing the property rights situation. I'll just take myself as an example. I have probably 75 trees on my property, anywhere from large to not very large. I would hope that the government's not going to tell me I can't cut down. I like cutting down trees, but I would hope they wouldn't stop me from cutting down a tree, or that I'd have to do a tree survey anytime that I'd look at my property. So maybe that's the key, is once the house has been built, once the property is developed as a single-family home, then the individual property owner would have the flexibility of being able to cut down trees.
Well, I think that's a good point. We could say if a single-family home exists on this property as of the date of this ordinance, whatever we want to say, then they would be exempt.
So that would be one aspect. And then we could kind of take a layer at a time and look at it.
A lot of these plans do exempt people of certain income brackets. You know what I mean? When there's a lot of heart, there are a lot of hardship situations that are addressed. Like Fred, like you said, though, I don't know.
I have not seen ordinance that looks at it from a income level.
Really?
I've seen it where you go by area. In other words, you could even say like a district, an overlay district area, that you'd have to look at, just like we have the historic overlay area or Whiskey Road overlay area. So, I mean, you could even overlay certain areas of your city, and that would be
across all zones.
Legal, I believe.
But, and that would be across all zones.
Across all zones, if you wanted to.
Well, that's very... Speaking of ordinances, I looked up today in Mr. Google, U.S. Landscape Ordinances Annotated Reference Handbook covers more than 300 U.S. cities. And so there's a lot of information out there on how to do it. And what I really believe, though, is we need... we can't solve it here where we're going. I think we really need a comprehensive look at it, almost like a task force or a committee, to really evaluate just that issue of how do we go about saving Aiken's trees. Chapel Hill is now working on an ordinance for theirs, and they're using DeKalb County, Georgia's ordinance on the same thing. So... we're all becoming conscious of it.
Well, in my opinion, there are a number of conditions you have to look at. New development is one, and Jane and I share the concern of some recent things that have happened with some new development we've had, but existing homes, what I am faced with on the north side of town, especially in the Tool Hill area, sitting in McCormick Street, is folks wanting to cut down trees, and there are older folks who view it as a safety problem with them.
Yes, sir.
And they are fearful when they come home, not knowing who's behind the trees. So it's conditioning them to understand that this adds value. You don't need to cut down your trees to be safe. personally, I've had a husband that's wanted to cut down a tree now for about 5 to 7 years, and it hobbles over our bedroom, and he claims that one winter that tree is going to fall over our bedroom and we're going to be in bed, and I'm going to be responsible for whatever danger I face, because he's going to be up and moving by the time the tree falls in with the ice storm. But nevertheless, he feels he should be free to cut down that tree because it's on his property and it imposes a danger. But that's I think we have to also determine and possibly take some individual concerns whether it the person feels like it's an undue burden for them to have that tree and whether it's causing some problems in their homes. I know with Dr. Levin, and you faced that with Jackie, where she felt that tree in the back of her place was a concern for her business and the problems she faced with that tree there, but also a safety concern as well. So there's a lot of individual personal concerns that people have with trees, but I'm one that if you ask me to personally, I'd figure a way that you should build around that tree personally, because I'm a tree lover and hugger. So,
but one of the ordinances I know says that if a tree is within so many feet of your home, I mean,
safety.
Again, that safety issue. And one of the things I do think we want to remember is that our tree ordinance doesn't say you can't ever take down a tree, but it says that if you do, you have to either plant something somewhere else,
right,
plant something
replace
else,
property.
To, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To mitigate it.
Right. I know, for what it's worth, I know the city of Conway has a tree ordinance that prohibits you from cutting down trees on residential property in the city of Conway.
Really?
I know this because my mother-in-law was cited for violating that ordinance.
Oh, no.
She cut down a dogwood tree in her yard, and she wanted me to take it to the Supreme Court. But she was ordered to replace the tree with another tree at another location in the yard, and that's one of the things you typically see.
I think we really have to do something. We can't just set it aside.
I think there's got to be some limitations on that, because you just can't say any tree.
No.
It's got to be major tree, some kind of. This thing doesn't really, I don't think, have to be complicated.
No.
We could come up with something that says any tree this big, maybe, or whatever it may be, you need to say.
Yeah.
Not the little things that a little dogwood that's going to grow up.
I looked at Hilton Heads and it was very lengthy.
Yeah. I think we ought to see what's out there. Yeah. If Conway has a good one, let's look at Conway. If Lake Forest has one, let's look at that.
Sure.
And let's each study it. And I don't think we necessarily need a new committee. Why not the Parks Committee? They deal with trees. That's mm-hmm. one of their purposes of being is,
it's a good idea.
Is taking care of the trees, watching out for the trees, and when to...
That would be great.
I think that's a great idea.
They would probably
they
love
know what,
to have
they actually know
else.
About plants, which
they would
is
love to have something else to do, I'm sure.
You do know a lot about them.
That's
but
a good idea.
I still think
there.
The first step is for us to sit back here a little bit, take another several weeks, and maybe study, each of us study what's out there. Mm-hmm. And then we can come back with more knowledge, I think, and better discuss it. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, like I said, if I had had a definite answer, I'd give it to you, but I didn't have it. All I had are questions, really.
So, Roger, could you get copies of some of these to us?
You won't find any brief ones. They're all very lengthy.
Well, I don't care.
And, I mean, you want 5, 10, 20?
How about Conway's?
I'd like to see a couple of good ones.
I think of any other, Gary, that you know of that are regional.
I did not remember Conway's
being
a real long word.
Maybe the Chapel Hill. Is the Chapel Hill one written? Dick?
They're in the process of it. I've got part of it. They've set up the justification. The ordinance is part of a townwide commitment to sustainability with potential to reduce carbon emissions and decrease the urban heat island effect for the following reasons. Then they go through a whole...
That's the university.
That's Chapel Hill, North Carolina?
Yeah.
City of...
Yeah.
They have... Yeah. Are they just starting
they're
on
they're working on it.
Oh, they're working
I didn't print out the whole thing because, again, they got a lot going.
Well, that's three right there. We'd probably get them on the internet.
Charleston, Hilton Head, both have.
But do they have ones that cover residential properties?
Yes.
They do?
And and of course, the Woodside BOA actually has one as well, because although it's basically 10 feet from your house on any side, you can take the trees down, but outside of that, it has to be reviewed.
Any size tree?
Yeah. Well, that's the way they talk about it, yeah.
Right.
It's not specific in the covenants. There probably is a rule of thumb.
You know, there's one other thing that I thought of while we were talking about lower income folks that maybe have some hardship and can't, they might want to take down a tree, but yet they don't have money to put another one up. You know, the city of Aiken being a tree city for 21, 22 mm-hmm. years, historically, we plant 200 trees a year. And perhaps some of those trees could be placed in different places. Now, that might be a stretch, I don't know. But if we're going to plant a tree somewhere,
why not there?
Right.
It's a possibility, something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Our trees that we plant, though, are replacing other trees in the right-of-way.
Well, yeah.
I'll give you one sentence.
There's no reason some of those couldn't be planted elsewhere.
Okay, you're talking about a lot of, you know, each tree that you buy then plant would probably be about $250 each at a minimum.
It wouldn't have to be that big. I mean, you're planting big. I've been at some tree plantings, and there have been some fairly small ones.
Well, and again, a small diameter tree would be. Okay.
Actually, I'll give you a one sentence vision. No net loss of trees with a general increase proportional to population growth. No reduction in canopy is what they put in parentheses.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
I don't think anybody on this council loves trees any more than I do. Myself, I had a neighbor that took down three or four pines, and I don't know that I've forgiven him yet. But, you know, we've not taken in consideration any trees that's being planted in Aiken today. And I also realize that, you know, there's mature trees along some of the major thoroughfares that are just beautiful, and I love those trees, and I certainly hope they'll be here 200 more years from now. But, you know, something's going to happen to some of those trees along the way, and that's why we're planting those trees that we're planting now. But, you know, what Dick is just saying, that there not be a loss. You know, that when trees are taken down, another one is planted in its place. And, you know, I lost one tree in my backyard. Lightning struck the tree, and so it's down. But, you know, I planted two trees in my front yard even before lightning took that one out. But, you know, there's also homeowners all across Aiken that's doing the very same thing that I'm doing.
Oh, absolutely.
And we need to take that into consideration as well. And I have a very difficult time telling a private property owner that you can't cut your tree down.
Well, all we're doing is talking about it now.
Yeah.
We're not telling anybody yet. And we've got to be very careful about that.
Yeah.
And I think it's got to be limited to, if we were ever to approve something like this, it's got to be limited to something that's pretty significant in the way of trees, I think.
I think what we need is a good publicity campaign. Get some of the young people to get started with the Save the Tree campaign like they did with recycling, and you'd see a really fast awareness, because they will convince their families that this is the right thing to do. But I agree with you, Don, that it would be really hard for me to tell someone who's got a threatening tree, including Mr. Price, that they can't take it down if they need to.
Right.
But we do need to educate people to why we need to keep as many or plant as many as we can. And we just had Earth Day, and that was a wonderful time to stress this, because it is important that we keep as many trees as possible.
Absolutely. And the thing with the elderly people is it may not necessarily be a threat, but in their mind it may
mm-hmm.
be.
Mm-hmm.
And to give them peace of mind, however, you could have Tom Rapp come out and look at it, and he'd say the tree's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that homeowner, just thinks that there's something wrong, and if they can have peace of mind by taking it down.
And then in some neighborhoods, they're so large that they cover the street lights, and they get concerned that, you know, I'm not getting enough light because of that tree. But I've not had them go so far as to say, I need you to take the tree down. They want to move the light first. But I think safety issue might not be the reason why most people are taking down trees. I think they don't want to, maybe not, I don't know. I just think maybe that we ought to promote trees. And
well,
I think
it's what Leslie said. The reason we got involved in this is because a developer took down every tree, and we got concerned. And again, where I started from this, Beverly, was just that if somebody owns a piece of property, everybody should have to do the same thing. If it's the same piece of property, and one guy has to go and get permission to take down trees and obey the tree ordinance, why not the other, any owner, you know?
Beverly, you raised a good point, which is maybe a little bit of a stretch for us, but it's a good point regarding young people and the appreciation and value for trees and their involvement. And I don't know how we do that, but it reminded me of Friday night with Dr. Ben Carson and his story about his interest in rocks and how he became very knowledgeable of rocks and the kinds of rocks that were stones that were available. He started out throwing stones at cars, and it became an education piece for him and an appreciation for stones. But the same holds true for our young people in educating them, and whether that can be part of the, what is the group we have, the mayor's
well,
council?
We can get the park commission to
adopt,
kind of
those kids engage with them,
work with, partner with them, and do some things in the schools. I think there are lots of ways to go with this to benefit all of us. As far as saving trees, we all need to be doing that. And I think that if we can appeal to the future in everybody, I mean, where is this going to lead if we cut down all the trees and help them to understand that we need to save as many trees as we could? We might go a long ways with that, just kind of educating people about the advantages of holding on to trees.
Okay. We know where we're going?
Yeah.
On this issue?
Let's all go out and buy trees?
No, I don't.
Huh?
I don't know where we're going.
I think the mayor's idea on the park commission is a wonderful idea.
Does anybody else want any copies of what other cities have? Am I the only one?
Okay.
No.
Everybody?
Okay, and then what are we going to do with it once you get it?
We can look them up on the internet, Roger.
That's fine. Are they all, you think, on this Conway, I wonder, on the internet? Well, probably all of them are.
They all are.
All right, let's go searching then, each one.
If you could just give us
do what you want.
Clues to how to
find
them on the internet, and you wouldn't have to waste all that paper that
I think
it may be worth buying this particular handbook, however, because it really talks about 300 cities with what were considered to be good ordinances. So
on the very
it gives us
thing
a clue.
We're talking about, including the issue we're talking about.
No. Well, we don't know.
No, we don't.
We don't some have do, it. Certainly. Have a copy yet? Have you got a copy?
No. I only found it on the net.
You know, basically what I'm hearing...
Well, I'm going to go search. I'm going to go on my computer, and I'm going to search.
But I'd like some clues as to where...
Yeah. We can go ahead and get you some... We'll send out over the internet over email some sites to look at. But what I'm hearing, I believe everybody to say, is that existing single-family homes would be exempt. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Grandfathered, yeah.
So
I would say so.
No matter what zone they're in currently, because if you look at the RML or GB zones, Hounds Lake, there's a good portion of Hounds Lake that's already in RML and GB, and even River Bluff, of course, the downtown area. So I would say at the very minimum you'd want to look at and say any single-family home, any current single-family home would be exempt from this issue of needing to do tree surveys or get permission to cut down trees. I think that's a good basis to start with. It's that that way you look at the existing Old Aiken grid, which is almost all RML or GB or LP. If there's a single family home there now, they'd be exempt. So that, therefore, all we're now talking about is when new residential homes will be built, and how do you want to deal with those?
Or when a single family home is torn down. Of course, they have to get permission to do that in the Old Aiken grid, don't they?
And one of the things, in many cases, if not a lot of cases, if you recall the last several months, people have been coming to us off of Charleston Street and some other areas along Carlton Avenue and saying, I want to rezone from GB to RS6 or 8 or whatever it's going to be. And at that time, when the rezoning happens, you could always go to them and say, not only do I want to rezone it, but I want it to be exempt from whatever tree ordinance you come up with. Because you've looked at the property and feel, based on what they're telling you, that we don't have to worry about the trees that are there. It just finding a way to... It's very similar for those that were at this rental inspection meeting we had the other day. We were trying to come up with an ordinance that affects just a few people, landlords, that aren't doing the job, but putting the burden on a bunch of people that are doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to be very careful that we try to protect the trees, that we're not overburdening everybody who's doing a good job.
That's true.
And that's part of that property rights that we're involved in. So I will come up with some sites, but I'll sit down also with staff and see what areas do we want to look at. But also that there would be some allowance that when somebody wants to build a home on a GB or LP or some other area that needs that rezoning, that they could ask for an exception to that. And then council has that right then to grant that or not at the time of the rezoning. And again, every current single family home would be exempt. Then you have to look at all the property that's already zoned single family. Let's say it's property's already zoned RS15 or RS10 or 8 or whatever it may be, but there's no house there. Are you going to require them to do a tree survey before? You know, those are the things that you have to ask. How far do we want to go with this?
But that could also be based somewhat on the size of the lot, it seems to me, because when you get down to the RS6, there's virtually no room in most cases to even leave a tree.
And, you know, Mayor, you have brought up the case of, you know, we're really worried about the big trees. Well, that's what our ordinance currently talks about. We have two categories, large-sized trees, and then there's the grand and significant. But even a dogwood tree is protected, even though that may only get 6 to 8 inches in diameter, it's considered a small specimen tree, and that's protected depending on the size. That's what happened to the mother-in-law situation in Conway. Obviously, the tree wasn't considered grand or specimen tree in relationship to our ordinance, which is 12 inches or bigger, but on the small trees it is considered a major situation. So let us give you a couple different thoughts on that also, so that, because I could see right away if we start talking about this, a lot of citizens are going to say, well, wait a minute, I mean, I'm going to have to...
That's right.
Exactly.
And I don't want alarm to go out there amongst the citizens as to what we're, I believe, trying to accomplish.
I do too. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Good discussion. Item 4 is a request to cancel the second meetings in May, July, and August 2007.
Council has on many occasions canceled the second meeting, especially July and August, but we have done it in May when Memorial Day would fall on the fourth Monday. Looking back, it's the last 3 years, 2 or 3 years, Memorial Day fell on the fifth Monday, ironically, but this year it does not. It is a holiday for all city residents. it used to be we would come in occasionally and have the meeting. And again, we could have it this year. We are recommending, though, we feel where we're at with issues and other things, that unless council wants to have a special meeting or something comes up, that we could go ahead and cancel the second meetings in May, July, and August, our summer schedule, and then Memorial Day. So for your consideration, this is a request to cancel the second meetings in May, July, and August.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor? Show of hands. Okay. Passes unanimously. What a surprise. Okay, item five, we added Municipal Association Conference, letting Roger know.
Okay. Most of you go to the Municipal Association. This year it's a little bit different venue, by different being the fact that it's being held in Greenville this year, where in the past it's been at Myrtle Beach or Hilton Head. That doesn't make the topics any different. And they actually have two great sessions that they're going to be holding on Thursday morning. One is the redevelopment of the downtown area, and one gets into the housing aspect. I mean, the housing and redevelopment of the downtown area. And then the other one gets into communication issues. Both look like very good topics. What I need to know is, because what happens is at noon on May 1st, there's a lottery almost type of system, and every city in the state is phoning in or using the internet to get reservations. We need to know now, or not now, but I need to know in the next few days, if not tonight, who's going, and if there's going to be any change from Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, like if you're going to come Wednesday night because you're going to be there Thursday morning. I know some of you haven't thought through all that, but if we at least get an indication tonight, we'll know what to reserve and what to get for the Greenville summer meeting. The meetings, again, are starting on Thursday, the 12th, ending. The sessions end generally Saturday afternoon. Many of you stay for the banquet that occurs Saturday night, and so therefore typically it goes from Thursday through Sunday. But again, some of you may be going up there early for the meetings on Thursday, and therefore we could reserve it Wednesday through Saturday night.
Do you have the schedule in front of you so we could look at it?
No, I do not, and I'm not too sure if I've seen a formalized schedule. And Mayor, you might know this, of the actual time and events.
I've just seen a draft, Jane.
Are the Thursday meetings like at 9 o'clock in the morning
or
something?
Typically they occur around 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. They go till noon. But one of them I do know is going to be on the downtown redevelopment. And boy, they have done a lot of redevelopment. But also they got some redevelopment of some industrial areas and other commercial areas that they have really, I've seen several of them, the Reedy River, things that may be a little bit out of the scope of Aiken, but are good examples of what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is on communication and how to deal with the press and getting the message out and talking to people. So again, either one of them you may be interested in.
Now, Friday is pretty much meetings as well.
Yeah, again, if you're not at that...
Just like it was last year.
Just like, you know, Thursday night's the reception, and then Friday is meetings all day. Saturday meetings go to about 4:30 in the afternoon.
Okay.
And the mayor, you move up from first vice president to president?
Lord willing, Bridgestone Rye.
We'll have to
still here.
Presidente.
Yeah. Bless your heart. Okay.
Hail to the chief. So, anybody able to tell us tonight if they're going or not going?
I'm going.
Well, if you could go ahead and call Sarah in the next couple of days, by the end of this week, we really need to have that information. We'll try to get you all at the host hotel unless you tell us differently. All the hotels are in the downtown area. There's the Hampton Inn, there's the Poinsettia.
But the meetings will be at the Hyatt.
I believe the meetings are at the Hyatt. So the most you have to walk is a couple of blocks. And it's a very walkable city.
If I have a schedule, I'll look tonight. and send it to Roger. Maybe he can send it out if I have one. I'm trying to remember whether I really have one yet. I think I have it in a draft schedule.
It's actually it's on the website.
It should be on.
Oh, is it? Okay. Just MUS?
It's on the website. There's so much good information on that website.
Okay, I'll have to look it up. What is that? MASC.org?
Yeah.
That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Sarah, I want to give you something.
How about the